us on the mic, talking life and what's it like. Middle age, it's quite the ride, finding joy and chasing pride. Career dreams and daily grind, funny moments that we find. Letting go of yesterday, making paths along the way. Middle age.
Hi, everybody. How are you, Tim?
Good, Trav. You know, I'm in Florida.
I know. You're joining us from the sunny state of Florida. How's it? How is it down there?
It's pretty sunny today.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's pretty sunny. And we're leaving tomorrow, but I was just swimming in a pool. So I'll take it. Very lucky.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, it's been great. Yeah.
Jersey Rick, I like it.
Yeah, it's cool.
Hi, everybody. As a reminder for those who have been here before and an intro for the first-time listeners, the Tim and Trav podcast is basically about life in our 40s and transitions and everything in between. And Tim, I think you can agree, we have a really great guest.
We've been
very blessed so far, and the blessings continue with our guest today.
Yeah, and I love the diversity of you know, industry that they represent as well. So. Matt brought a really, I learned a lot from our conversation with him, and I'm really excited to share that with other people.
Same, for sure. I learned something every time I talk to him. So, any hair care, tech products, anything, any reviews?
Not so much. No, nothing new that I've tried. I did discover that, for bald guys like us, you can use body wash on your head instead of,
I've been telling you this.
I did it because I had no other option. We got down here and it was the only thing available, so I used it. And
It works fine.
No, it worked fine. Yeah, it turns out it didn't really help, didn't hurt. So I'm in good shape. How about you?
I have some foreshadowing. I actually just ordered some beard oil. I normally don't grow my beard out that long, but somebody was telling me that if you really want it to not be like a kind of unkempt mess, you should use some sort of beard oil, and apparently it also keeps you from getting ingrown hairs. So I will report back. I might have to give it 2 weeks. You know me, I'm all about product testing. So
yeah, I know you like that. Does this mean that you're going to be growing that, extending what you have already grown?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah,
good for you. That doesn't bother you?
No, I'm past the point of it bothering me. It's like a 4 or 5 day hit where it's like, all right, this is too long. It's scraggly. It gets kind of whatever. It gets itchy, but I'm past that point now. So might as well grow it out for a while.
Well, you're a very handsome guy. I think whatever you decide to do will look great. I am very jealous.
Apply body wash on your head. Good looks.
Exactly.
Any listener comments? I don't have any.
I don't have any either. This week has been kind of quiet.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people to write in if you have any thoughts, suggestions. You know, especially since we're getting near the end of season one, and I think we have a really great plan for season two, which I'm really looking forward to talking more about. But for now, please use that email that we've created and send us your thoughts.
Which is timandtravpodcast@gmail.com. It's timandtravpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Tim, awesome wife moment?
Yeah, you know, so prior to coming down here, Christy thought, hey, listen, we're going on vacation, right? So just to kind of give some clarity on how we structure things with our kids, my boys, 13 and 11, both have cell phones, and I don't feel great about it. There are things about it that I enjoy and elements of it that, you know, it enhance, I guess, our ability to like track them or see what's going on or put money on their little wallets when they're at camp if they need money, things like that that are good. But overall, I think for the most part, we really struggle, and I assume a lot of parents do, with usage of cell phones. My daughter, 8, does not have a cell phone. So what we really wanted to do, and this was Christy's brainchild, was she said prior to this trip, she said, look, we can watch some things, the kids can watch something and do something on a screen, but no individual devices for the entire week, right? So no individual devices. She put limits on all of them, you know, because she can control that. And I thought it was brilliant. It's been so nice for them to have to kind of work out what show to watch, right? I mean, these are things that we don't do at home. I'm thinking now that maybe we should start to, because I hate the arguments with my kids over screen time usage. And I'm not, I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if I'm wrong. I mean, we could spend hours talking about this. I think a lot of people struggle with this, but it has been, I'm just going to say from the experience of these past 6 days, it's been awesome for them to not be sitting by themselves with a screen in front of them. And we don't do a whole lot. I don't want to give you the impression that like these kids are on it. They have very, very strict limits at home when we're there. We try to keep it to an hour in a day, which that may be a lot to some, may not be to others. But it's been really, really nice to just have that gone. And I got to give Christy a lot of credit for coming up with that, sticking to it, you know, putting the guidelines and structure in place. It's been very helpful. So nice. Thank you, Christy. Yeah.
Nice. I love it. That's great.
Yeah. What about you?
You know, we've talked about this on the fringes a little bit, and we don't need to get into the, like, this is not a political podcast. Everyone, luckily, has the freedom to choose what they feel is right.
Yeah.
I will go so far as to say, to explain this awesome wife moment, I will go so far as to say that the election did not end the way Kristen and I wanted it to. So one of the things, you know, in this really polarized, divisive atmosphere, one of the things that she and I have struggled with a little bit is we came from a very blue bubble in Los Angeles, for better or for worse, extremely. And we've mostly only really ever spent our time as adults in a blue bubble. And one of the really great things about Kristen is that she is not willing to dismiss things offhand quite as readily as I am. And so she is a constant learner, a constant source for understanding. And I just have to acknowledge how awesome it is that rather than be, you know, anybody can be glib, anybody can be a sore loser, anybody can, you know, crack jokes or put their head in the sand, dig their heels in, be a real ass about any loss, right? That's a very easy, kind of lazy way to look at it, in my opinion. Kristen is the polar opposite of that. Kristen's first reaction after her disappointment was, all right, we gotta learn from this. We have to understand the other side. We have to figure out, not in a defeatist way, but in just like, I need to learn. And so I need to give her props for that. Because it's not easy. And you know, being here in Ohio, which went red, it's difficult, frankly, if you don't agree with that. You know, so it's, we can talk all about, you know, various different topics in a very safe space because she's so open to learning, open to the other side, open to hearing, open to listening. And that's not just with politics. That's with everything in her life. I think that's why she's so successful and why she's the special person that she is. But I have to acknowledge that, especially right now, it feels very timely. And it's, you know, it's also, frankly, probably the only way through in general is to have people like that. So, you know, she's the one you want in your corner no matter what, but especially for that too. So
that's a beautiful reflection and a beautiful testament to who she is as a person. And I love the, I mean, one of the big takeaways for me that I heard from you was kind of just living in a state of intrigue, right? Living in a state of curiosity and really working with that, though, at the backdrop of that, really working to unify people as a whole. And I know that's a part of who she is. So I think that's fantastic. And I love the fact, too, and I think you're, I'm also taking from that the need to continue on, and to continue to working for what you believe to be right and just and good. So I took a lot out of that. I think that's great. Because I'm getting a lot of haters too, right? Who are I've seen a lot of stuff and a lot of people reaching out saying that this is doomsday and the end of the world. And you know, that's one way. I'm not discrediting them. I choose not to feel or look at it that way necessarily, because I don't think that ultimately will get us to where we need to be as a community.
And I think it's really important to acknowledge too, Tim, that like the people in our lives, like you and Kristen, are actually doing things in their daily lives and probably have a bit of a deeper understanding of what it takes to make change. You know, that's part of who you are as people. So, you know, that doesn't go unrecognized, but it's definitely not without its challenges.
I would say Kristen. I would take myself out of that category, but thank you, Trav. I appreciate that. That was nice of you.
Something awesome you've read, seen, experienced?
Yeah, I'll jump at this real quick. So we went to this place last night called Pop Stroke. Have you heard of it?
It rings a bell, but can you tell me?
It was funny. Yeah, I've never been to something like it. Essentially, it's like glorified miniature golf. And so, and have you been to a Top Golf? Are you familiar with Top Golf?
Yeah, yeah.
I like golf. I probably play 3 or 4 times a year. I'm fine. I'm not great. Like, I can get by, but I just like golf. So this is funny. This is essentially like Top Golf meets miniature golf. You know, it is 2 18-hole courses, and there's all these great, like, it's not like windmills and like the amusement type miniature golf, you know, that you would sometimes think of when you think of like maybe Florida or something like that. This was more like, you know, bunkers and difficult mounts. Yeah. So we went there last night, never heard of it before, but a couple people down here told us to check it out. It was a lot of fun. I mean, the kids all had fun. My parents had fun. And I had fun. I mean, Christy had fun. We all had fun. And, you know, of course they do it up, and like at every hole, there's drink holders and QR codes so that you can buy more of the food and drinks and have them bring it out to you. Like they put the party element into it, but you know, it's just like a good time and, a really nice distraction. So if people are ever like, you know, in the Florida area or this is in Sarasota, I would strongly suggest checking it out. I'm sure there are other, what did I call it? Pop Stroke.
Pop Stroke.
It's kind of a funny name. But that was fun, dude. It was the first time I'd done something like that, so that was cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How about you?
So this is gonna make me sound like a cult member, and I don't mean it to. But I am a member. I guess a member. I don't really know how you say it. I own a Peloton, and Kristen and I.
Oh, you're in the club.
Yeah, and we have been since the pandemic broke, and you know there was like it was harder to get out and do stuff, and so when we moved here, it was like a big thing that it was like, all right, we're gonna splurge, we're gonna get Peloton.
Cool.
I gotta be honest with you, when we bought it, I was like, this thing's gonna last a year, and then it's gonna, you know, kind of like the old school Nordic track of our youth, where it's like, this thing's great for hanging wet clothes on.
Yeah.
But we have it. We've actually stuck with it quite a bit, Kristen more so than me. But the awesome thing about it was, I actually do a fair amount when I'm motivated. Of yoga on it, because it's not just cycling. They have a bunch of different things you can do. You can do body weight stuff. There's a whole thing. I don't need to be an advertisement for it. Well, Peloton, there's a guy on there named Dennis Morton.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken a couple of his classes this week, and one of them was actually an 80s thing. And he just made it very digestible. He kicked my butt a little bit, which is not all that hard to do, but it was just kind of one of those, like, you know what? I have to acknowledge that, like, it takes a certain amount of talent and knowledge and just, like, I don't know, joy of life to, like, really make a playlist and a flow practice or whatever it might be, where some dumpy 43-year-old guy in Ohio is like, yeah, I like this yoga class. This is perfect. You know, like, Dennis Morton, like, he cracks some jokes, you know, like, he's fun about it. I'm not saying other forms of yoga aren't, but, like, it was just kind of something that I related to and I enjoyed. And it's like, you know what? I should actually acknowledge this more. This is actually kind of cool. So there you go.
I think that's great. Yoga is tough.
It's very hard. Yeah.
It is tough. Oh my gosh, I tried it many years ago and it just was not for me. But how many different teachers do they have, Trav? I mean,
tons.
What made you, okay, I was thinking about that, like how you came to decide that he was the right one for you, or what resonated with you about him?
There's a few people that I like, a few instructors, I think they're called instructors.
Okay.
And he does like cycling and stuff too.
Okay.
And so some of them are just yoga teachers, some of them are just like body weight or weight
gotcha.
Class teachers, and some of them are just cyclists, and I think there's some folks that are just Pilates, and there's actually a gentleman that does adaptive work. I believe
wow.
I can't remember exactly, I haven't taken his classes, but You know, they've made it very approachable for various different people and fitness levels, but yeah, well, I found him because I was looking for good music in a cycling class, and I was like, oh, he does yoga too. I'll try that. So there you go.
Good for you, man. Good for both of you for sticking with it. I think if I had purchased a Peloton when you did, it would turn into that drying rack that we mentioned earlier. You know, and I was so close to buying a rower New Year's.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to say it. I know you're probably going to get frustrated, but Costco had one for sale. I do find a way to slide Costco into every one of these conversations.
That should be our sponsor.
But I walked by this thing for weeks and thought to myself, for $400 or whatever, I should really do this. I talked to a couple people. I didn't pull the trigger on it. I decided not to do it. And I think I made the right decision. I don't think that I would use it.
Was it one of the water ones?
I don't even remember, to be honest with you. I don't even remember, but I think Peloton has their own rower too, and sort of like the Cadillac of rowers, I assume. But it literally would be sitting in the corner of a room right now. So I don't know.
I like it.
Good for you, man. Good for you. That's cool.
Thanks, buddy. So yeah. That was my cool thing I've experienced. Tim, have you heard back? Or I should ask: have you reached out to Dyson yet?
I'm good. You know, I know, and I feel like I feel like a failure because I said I was going to do it. I did think about it at different points this week, and I have not done it. I'm not going to lie. Let me see if I can get to it before our next episode. Let me put it that way. We're flying home tomorrow, so I do have the weekend. So I don't want to totally Let me see what I can do, and I will get back to you.
I'm not going to write you off just yet.
Yeah. Thank you.
I fully acknowledge too that I have not done anything about that. So,
okay, thank you.
With that being said, let's continue on with the suggestion from our listener Jeff for an inspirational word.
I know, I like that.
My mom always told me do something interesting, and opportunities will come up.
All right. Let's segue into our guest, Tim. We actually had a really in-depth conversation with him, and somehow I feel like we only scratched the surface. So Matt Russo, I don't really, to be honest with you, I don't know how to sufficiently introduce him. We get to it in the interview, luckily, but I don't really know how to succinctly describe him because he is so many things and he brings so much to the table. So if you're cool with it, let's just roll into that and have Matt speak for himself. Here's Matt Russo. All right, everybody, we would like to welcome Matt Russo. Hello, Matt. Matt is somebody from my personal life I feel very lucky to know. He and I go way back from our California days, and then we have now both transitioned back to Ohio since then. And we're excited to have Matt on for a lot of reasons.
This is a privilege for me, Trav. I'm excited.
It totally is. He should be.
Yeah.
Tim, I think your toaster's done or something.
That was the washing machine. I'm sorry.
Oh, nice. Matt, if you could do us a solid and just, I know all the wonderful things about you, but I'd love for you to tell our listeners and Tim about your current profession and kind of how you got into that. Because I think we're going to talk a lot about transitions and so forth, and you're one of the people I thought of immediately before this season even started. So we're very excited to have you on to talk all things. But could you kind of give us a foundation of where you started, where you are now, that kind of thing?
Sure. Let's see, how far do we want to go back? Kind of the tongue-in-cheek way I've described myself before to people who don't know me is like in high school, I was kind of that person who straddled a whole bunch of the different social circles. So I was in calculus, but I was also in, art class, but I was also, a volleyball player and as a result, friends with the jocks and, did a lot of different things that at the time didn't make a lot of sense. As you know, I went to the University of Cincinnati, eventually got a degree in industrial design, which is kind of that blend of graphic design and 3D, design and engineering and having to think through processes and all that cool stuff. And then right around the time before I graduated, I realized that's not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So I tell people I went to school to figure out what I didn't want to do. Even though I love it, like I still doodle cars in my notebooks and all that kind of stuff, I really kind of fell in love and fell into digital marketing and building websites and applying a lot of the design elements of my education to whatever it was I was working on. And so that's a long way to say you never really know where things are going to end up until you're in them. And I think that's okay. One of the things I've heard recently, or I've heard a while ago that just came to mind again recently, was like when you're young, you should say yes to a whole bunch of stuff. And then over time, start to say no to more and more things. And as we'll talk about in, you know, things about career transition and life transition, it almost reverts back and it's like, all right, we just got to say yes to a whole bunch of stuff to figure out our way again. Because if the path was clear, then we would just say no to everything else right now. So yeah, that's a long way of saying back in Columbus, Ohio, moved here back when I was in fifth grade. My dad bounced around the East Coast a bit because he was always in retail. And yeah, moved out to LA for almost 5 years before the pandemic hit. And then it hit, moved back. And have been doing a variety of different things for the past probably year and a half or so, which we can dig into.
Yeah, for sure. You know, obviously you talk about your foundation with industrial design. Your program there was 6 years, is that right? Or five?
Oh, yep.
Five. Mm-hmm. Okay, out of DEP, which is a huge program, by the way. That's not like, I think one of the things I find really interesting about your background is that's not something that you go into lightly. So transitioning out of that was probably something very, you know, monumental or at least consequential, right? Like,
yeah, yes and no. And it's funny, like so I always lived with business majors and engineering majors. I never lived with the artsy fartsy kids who were in my program. I remember my roommates always joking with me like, Russo, come on, let's just go out to the bar, man. And I would say like, you guys can show up to your exam tomorrow super hungover and still get a B. I have to actually like produce work and put it up on the walls and have a critique tomorrow. And if I don't produce, I get an F, like I get a zero or, you know, pretty darn close to it. And so while it was challenging to kind of say, yeah, that's not what I want to do, I still took a lot of that work ethic and a lot of that, just having to figure out how things work into whatever my next thing was. And so I still take that, you know, today. I kind of joke that I'm like, I love building stuff and I think I'm good at a lot of those things, but as a result, it's kind of my Achilles heel. It's like, okay, should I be building all this stuff? Should I be getting my hands dirty in as many things as I am? Mm-hmm. You know, that chapter is yet to be written, but, you know, that's kind of how a lot of my college career influenced, I think, where I am today.
Sure. And then in terms of building things, you were in the startup tech world for several years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have recently transitioned out of that. Can you talk to us kind of about that build up and then the transition from there to where you are now?
Yeah, sure. So right after school, I actually worked for a company that was kind of designing and implementing interior spaces for like restaurants, commercial spaces, retail spaces. And then that was right around the time I started tinkering more and more with the digital space and eventually got hired by a startup here in Columbus called Bulks, B-U-L-X, which was, if you guys remember, like the flash sale sites. So Gilt Group and Rue La La, they had high-end luxury products, usually apparel, for super, super cheap. We were doing that for high-end home improvement products. So sinks, faucets, toilets, blankets, rugs, all that kind of stuff. And we had a partner up in the Chicago area who was in charge of the product. Our team was in charge of the marketing as well as the technology. And we eventually grew it from zero to 25,000 members nationwide in like 9 months and quickly surpassed the amount of product that we had to sell to that membership base. But that was kind of my first foray into startups and just figuring stuff out. Like I had tinkered with and built some HTML websites before, but it really wasn't, e-commerce. It wasn't building, you know, email lists. It wasn't doing all the things that are kind of now commonplace. So I tell that precursor story because that the guy I worked with then went on to found the company that I had just left about a year and a half ago. We re-met back up a few years later. I eventually moved out to LA where I stepped into the CMO and COO role and oversaw operations for that company in the advertising technology space. And yeah, was with that company for 8.5 years and saw a lot of ups and downs. Was an amazing, you know, trajectory. It's a profitable, funded startup. It has done now 9 acquisitions, including buying companies out of the likes of Qualcomm and Disney, and they are still rocking and rolling over there. And so now that they're around 200 people, it was just a different time in the life cycle of that company from when I started, which was, you know, 20 or 25 people. So
that's huge. And then tell us more about what you're doing now, because I think this is a, not only do I admire it, but it takes a everything you're saying so far, and then also what I know of you personally, it takes a lot of moxie, is how I'm going to describe it. And
thanks.
You don't step into it lightly. So, Tim, did you have something to say? You look like you're in.
You said moxie, and I just thought of myself. So,
oh, right. This is why you have so much in common. So, you know, in terms of that moxie and staying curious, like, tell us what you're doing now. And
sure. Yeah, so I, my brother and I, one of my brothers, Adam, here in town, had been a longtime franchise owner for a group called Budget Blinds. So they produce window coverings for homeowners and businesses and go and install them. He was in the process of looking at exiting that. And so we partnered to found actually a local painting company. It has a super original name. It's called Columbus Painting. And but the reason we liked it is because it says who we are and what we do. As a result, also with my kind of marketing and digital marketing hat on, we own columbuspainting.com, which in the short term doesn't matter that much. You can send traffic and leads anywhere. But over the long term, we know there's an opportunity to rank for that for people who are searching for painting in Columbus and building a brand around that kind of local or regional brand. So yeah, we've been doing that for just about 8 months now, officially. Has been going well, similar to, you know, the advertising technology startup that I was at. Lots of ups and downs early on, and especially when it's this early, you feel like every little bump. But usually, and hopefully, you know, when, you know, a few years pass and you zoom out, all of those, you know, peaks and valleys right now feel and look and seem really inconsequential compared to, you know, the long-term trajectory of where we think this thing can head. So, yeah, it's been awesome. It's felt great to be building again and learning, meeting different types of people, working with different crews, setting up processes, you know, connecting all the pipes that, you know, a lot of more established companies take for granted. And I think that's kind of one of the skill sets that I bring of, you know, hey, I take this skill set that I have for granted, I think, and we show other painting companies who, you know, are a few years ahead of us or 5 or 6 years ahead of us. And they're like, how did you build all this so quickly? And I'm like, it's just kind of not a pat in the back, but it just kind of comes second nature. And when you do it so much, it's just like, yeah, this is just what we do now.
Who are your customers, Matt? Are you doing residential? Are you commercial? Are you in other spaces?
Great question. It's primarily residential. So we market, you know, across a lot of different channels, print, digital, SEO, pay-per-click, all that good stuff, direct to homeowners who have us out to their homes and we look at it and give them quotes and paint. We've also generated a handful of what I'll call light commercial jobs as well. We painted a 62 area middle school here over the summer.
Wow.
We are doing, kicking off a condo project, exterior condo projects with 60 some units tomorrow. So yeah, you know, it's in a good way, and this is kind of why we were attracted to the market, like you can literally put paint on anything. It may not be the right decision in the long term, but as a result, like there is a constant need for this type of stuff. And while it's, in my opinion, in history, it's sexy to go after, you know, the big markets, and it could be a $1 billion idea or a $1 billion technology or company, there's so many unknowns and so many variables that I was allured to, hey, this is a constant ongoing need, and our ability to professionalize this business, I think, will be our differentiator, especially over the long term.
There's two things that I immediately think of. Number one, you didn't start this because you love painting. In fact, you don't really pick up a brush in your position with Columbus Paint, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we are basically the sales and marketing and fulfillment portion, but the production is primarily, so we use partners who, you know, we contract the work out to. But back to your original point, like, I don't know, like maybe this is a superpower, but it's also like the Achilles heel. Like I always say, like business is just infinitely interesting to me. I don't care if it's, you know, a shirt manufacturer or a painting company or a technology company. Like there are always interesting ways to things to build, interesting ways to reach consumers or reach your customers. And so to me, I think the saying is like all business under the surface, all business tastes like chicken. You know, it's like what you're building or what you're delivering might change, but like the fundamentals are always there. And so as a result, like I kind of don't care if it's unsexy or it's not cool as building an AI startup, which we can talk about if we want to at some point.
I have to say everything that I've seen you do is so impressive. And I say that, and I mean this in the best possible way. I don't necessarily, when I think of things that are impressive, I don't necessarily think of a painting company. You know what I mean? Right. Like I don't think of residential painting as something that, like you're saying, is the big sexy thing, right?
Yeah.
But the growth and the ability to be so agile the way that you are with your brother is like, I mean, like I just can't say enough things about how impressive that is to me, because it takes a lot of guts. You know, I think that's where I get back to the moxie of it, is like, you really have to step. I know that you have a basis for all these things in terms of your experience and starting companies, and it's like second nature to you, but it doesn't come without a certain amount of risk.
For sure.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that transition in terms of risk? Like what were you evaluating other things? What made you feel comfortable about taking this risk?
Yeah. I think a couple of things. There's a guy out of Columbia, Missouri named Brent Beshore. He's kind of the godfather of modern private equity, if you will. Younger than me, eventually basically started buying up some different companies in a kind of a traditional holding company style. Not related at all, no cross-selling in very different industries, and kind of did the podcast circuit, I don't know, 5 years ago, and now has raised two massive rounds and are buying up, you know, lots of different types of companies. And so I bring him up because then there have been other people, Cody Sanchez and others, Nick Huber, especially focused on kind of what they call sweaty startups or kind of service-based businesses, who really started, I think, to popularize stuff that was happening behind the scenes that most traditional business people weren't really aware of, right? Like all the headlines go to tech company raises $40 million in a Series A, but like nobody's really talking about the HVAC company that's, you know, doing $10 million a year in revenue and $2 to $3 million in EBITDA. Like that, and that's kind of crazy. And so a more recent one that has the other thing that, and kind of an overall trend that I think hits a lot of this stuff is, which seems stupid, but like the combination of the internet plus old things, call them service-based businesses in this case. And the reason I bring that up, there's a guy named Chris Hoffman out of, I believe, St. Louis area, who runs Hoffman Brothers. It's just called Hoffman Brothers, but it's basically an HVAC plumbing and I believe electrical company. His dad founded it, grew it to like $10 million a year. He and his brother have taken it over, and I think over the last 7 or 8 years have grown it to $150 million in revenue. So yeah, the face you just made is like, A, holy crap, I didn't know these businesses could get so big. Mm-hmm. And B, even if they did before, because of the lack of internet or because of the lack of sharing that people were willing to do online, nobody even knew. Like, unless you were living in St. Louis and you went to that country club and you knew that dude, mm-hmm. you didn't realize how well some of these really good businesses are. And then when you kind of, when I think about the Columbus area, like these brands that you see all advertising all the time, they aren't just there doing it because they think it feels good. Like they're doing it because they are established players and they built this stuff up over the past 5, 10, 20 years. And they are much bigger than most of these, you know, most people will ever really think about. And so mm-hmm. kind of the combination of those things kind of got our gears turning about what gets us excited and what types of businesses do we want to be in. The last point that I'll add is roofing, HVAC, some of these more traditional, larger kind of home service based companies are now starting to get scooped up by private equity because they realize, wow, these are really great cash flow vehicles. They're sure. constantly in need. If you professionalize sure. them and grow them, they can be really great investments. Painting has not yet gotten there. And I think it's kind of the sleeper industry that money will eventually flow into. Not that we have any intentions of selling in the next 5 years or anything, but I think that opportunity is there because people will see when you run a good business that has a good brand and people constantly have a need for, they can be perennial winners.
When you were looking at starting this, did the market in terms of home improvement play in? And did you consider anything, like you've mentioned some other companies and so forth that have done different types of things that aren't painting. Did other things cross your path and you just kind of said, that's not really what we want to do because of X, Y, and Z? Or was it like you found painting and it was like, this is the thing?
I think it's a little bit of a combination of both. Like back in high school in the summers, I used to paint houses. So like I've also painted, I don't know, 90% of the interior of our house here. And so as a result, like just having a little bit of familiarity felt better to me than going and trying to launch an HVAC company or a roofing company.
Right.
The other piece is the market is huge. I forget the exact number, but like window coverings, where my brother came from, I think is like a $50 billion a year industry. And painting in general is magnitudes larger than that, or multiples rather. The difference is that the average employee count of a painting company across the country is like 1.5 people. So that basically means it's one dude with a truck, and then he's got a helper during the summer, right?
Right.
And so a massive market dispersed across like thousands, literally thousands of painting companies, even in Columbus or Ohio in general, like that's a big enough market to go play in. And as the differentiator of, we show up on time, we are professional, we communicate, like we do all these things that, you know, traditional, you know, I'll call them white collar people kind of take for granted in their day to day. You know, that is the differentiator. We don't need a market that's growing at 45% compounding for the next 10 years. Like it's already a big enough market. Our opportunity is to grab up that market share.
And I'm sorry, are these your employees that are doing the actual painting, or are you subbing that out?
Yeah. So we do have, it's myself and my brother. We also have an office manager who helps set appointments, you know, do that kind of stuff. And then most of the production itself is actually subbed out. So, and it's interesting, right? The question that we often get is like, well, why don't these companies just go paint for themselves? And the challenge is often they aren't good at sales. They aren't good at marketing. They aren't great at showing up on time or collecting all the necessary details in order to do a job. They can do the work. They're qualified to do that. And we literally interviewed like 23 different crews before we got started to pick the two or three that we knew we were, you know, had confidence in that we were going to use. So in that way, they are all open to go run Facebook ads and set up websites and do all the things that, again, come as second nature to me, but most of them don't have that skill set. So actually, I believe that we get to empower them to do the work that they're really good at doing, and take, you know, kind of offload the stuff that we take for granted that we are good at doing. And it's kind of a good combination there.
I was going to say, it's very symbiotic in terms of like, they have more time to do what they're doing, right?
Yep.
And then you have more time because you're not the one doing, you know, the quote unquote painting work.
Yep.
Like you get to focus on that and everybody wins.
Kind of. Yep. Deal. Exactly.
That's smart. In terms of your trajectory, obviously you've changed a few things here and there and adapted as needed and stayed curious throughout all that. Have you discovered anything about yourself in those years professionally that came as a surprise? Or
is that a question for Matt or is that for me?
Tim, you're a constant surprise. So, like, we're not even going to get into that. We only have
I have to throw a couple curveballs into every episode, you know, because if Trav were talking the whole time, people would just walk away quickly.
I'm very used to it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a weird. It's part, you know, I think the typical, like, I want to prove to myself that I can go do something and continue learning and growing. I think the other piece too is just the kind of general interest in, can you take some skills or successes that you've had and go apply them in other areas? And is that a new and interesting combination instead of just doing it the same way as it's always been done?
Sure.
there's a book that I always loved that I think I read in college. It was called Where Good Ideas Come From by, I think, Stephen Johnson. Concept that always stuck with me in that is this idea called the adjacent possible. The idea is, like, basically you can go into a room and call that like a space, and you can only do the things that are currently available to you. You can't jump 5 or 10 years into the future because those things don't exist yet, even though like that's the future that you want or believe in. And so the adjacent possible is, okay, this is currently our world that we're living in, and this is what's possible. But right next door, just through that doorway, is, I don't know, call it AI, right? And once AI starts to develop, then, okay, cool, there's this whole next room that's available to us that we can start to build on and build on and build on. And so, like, having this vision for the future, but also, like, figuring out ways to combine things to make our current place better, or, you know, more adaptable, or, you know, whatever, you know, thing you're trying to figure out right now, I think is the interesting point. I talked a little bit about AI, and I'm generally a bigger advocate for AI than I am for like blockchain and Bitcoin and all that stuff. But it satisfies kind of the creative side of my brain, but also mostly I think it's just more applicable to the business world or world in general. Cause like I see so many combinations that are possible both in the painting company and other places in our lives that like those things were not possible before, and now they are. And now the application of those things in a painting company or our personal lives makes it so much more interesting. So I keep tinkering with stuff. I try not to let it distract me, but like you also don't know until you tinker, until you try and build some new stuff that you're like, oh crap, we could automate this whole portion of our process when we, you know, book a new client, for example. So right. Bit of a rant, but that's kind of where my head goes on combining a lot of different things.
No, I think it also goes to the fact that, you know, when you and I get to hang out, and I know it's not as often as I would like, but it's one of those, like, I should just be asking you, like, all right, Matt, what are you tinkering with? Like, because yeah. I feel like you've got that brain of, like, in the background, this is kind of what I'm up to. Like, this is the thing yeah. that's keeping the doors open, but in the background, I've got this going. So I can see
what... Can I give you an example of what I'm doing?
Yes, please. Right, yeah, okay. Please.
So everybody knows ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. Are you guys familiar with Claude? It's Anthropic's version. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Anthropic is a different company than OpenAI, and their chat bot is called Claude. Claude is very good at both writing and specifically coding. So I had this idea for an app that I wanted to build for another idea that my brother and I are working on. Travis and I talked about this the last time we were together.
Yeah.
And the idea is generate images that are conceptual by AI and then be able to route those to different places. So automatically post them to a website, add a title and a description that will rank well in SEO, and then go. So I had all this idea in my head, and there are some services out there that will help you generate images, obviously, but nothing as streamlined as I wanted. So I literally went into chat and described what I wanted to build, and Claude helped me think through it, ask additional questions, and then it started producing code. So right now, I started working on it over the weekend, a couple hours, you know, at nights in between stuff. And yesterday I put a couple hours into it. I have a functioning React app, a web app. I'm not a programmer. Like, I have a fully functioning app that I can type into my browser. You guys can go to. It hits Replicate's API. It generates images. It automatically creates prompts and titles. And then the next step is hooking it up to WordPress or social media or whatever I want it to do. I am not a programmer. Like, I don't know how to write code. I obviously have some product experience based on my background, but like just the fact that I can do that over a few hours is freaking bonkers.
I actually feel like I need to listen to that over again, because half of what you said is like, I don't think I'm smart enough to compute this. I watched Tim's hair fall out.
But I guess the point is, like, we're getting to the point now where you don't have to know how to do that. All you have to do is all you have to know is how to ask the questions, mm-hmm. and then follow instructions almost. Like, like I had never used GitHub before. I've had an account, but later I've never posted to it. We created a new repository. I've never used VS Code before. I downloaded VS Code and followed the instructions, and now I'm writing Git commands and pushing to GitHub, and it's automatically pushing to my web app. It's crazy.
Do you know what I really want to do right now? I really want to go. I really want to go back in time to tiny baby Matthew and his Legos. And I have a very strong feeling that baby Matthew's Legos and baby Travis's Legos look very different.
I was actually more of a Ninja Turtles guy, but
yeah. Oh, okay, all right.
You guys could have hung out. Matt, I think I'm fascinated, man. And we didn't even really get into, I mean, I wish we had more time. We didn't even get into the sort of marketing expertise that you bring to your role and how mm-hmm. you know, use that as a tool to attract and retain clients and push your organization forward. I would love to talk to you more about that because I think that's just fascinating in and of itself. But for me, you're really, you know, you're inspiring me and hopefully our listeners as well too. And it's the poster over your, I guess that's your right shoulder there is to get into, you know, to be bold. I mean, what words of advice would you give to either a young person or even a person who's thinking about, you know, like, what do I do? Who's, you know, curious about exploring something deeper or going into new territory? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I think it is back to that original thing, which is, you have to be willing to tinker and try new things and say yes to stuff early on, even if you aren't sure if it's going to pan out. Because if we all had the answer and, you know, we knew the path to wealth and health and success and family relationships and all that, we would just do it. But you really don't know. And I also think like it's so circumstantial based on the individual. My strengths are going to be different strengths than Trav's and than yours. And I think you have to lean into those. Like there's no one right way to do that. The other piece is I would say carving out enough time and margin in your day to be able to tinker with that. Mm-hmm. It's easy for me to be like, I have to do these things because this business needs it, or my kids need this attention or whatever. Like if you book yourself solid all the way through the day and all the way through your life, you're never going to have the flexibility to tinker and to try new things and to do new things. And that's just on micro stuff, on trying it, you know, trying a new AI tool, or it could be, I don't know, trying a whole new industry or trying, you know, a whole new hobby. So mm-hmm. I think as the older we get, definitely, I know I feel this way. This is what I do. This is who I am. I don't deviate from that. And I try to break out of that as much as I can, even though I'm a bit of a runner, as Travis knows. So like, it's easy for me to just walk out the front door and go on a run. It's harder for me to get to the gym and put on the shoes and go work out for an hour because it feels different and it feels newer, even though I know I should be lifting heavy weights like we all should.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah. Tim, do you want to ask our impact question?
I would, yeah. So Matt, and hopefully you were prepped for this, but name one person or experience, please, that has had a significant impact on your life.
Yeah. Shout out to Mrs. Krieger. She was my 10th grade English teacher. And it's not just her. Other people have kind of had this impact on me, which is, I remember, and it's no knock on my best friend, Brian, either, because we were in the same, we were in the same English class together. But I remember her pulling me aside one time and saying like, hey, you can do better than just like goofing around. I know it's fun and I know like these are your buddies, but like you're capable of more, and having somebody believe in you and see things in you that you don't see in yourself, I think is always super impactful. Cause it's super easy to, like I just said, this is who I am. This is what I'm good at. This is what I can do. This is what I'm capable of. It's harder to see yourself, you know, have that out of body experience and see, you know, really what you're what's possible for you. So having either call them mentors or people who can push you, not in a bad way, but in a, hey, you're capable of more. I think that's kind of like my insight and something that I'll be focused on for, honestly, for the rest of my life.
That's a great answer. You know, I think as you've listened to other episodes too, we've found that educators are very commonly referred to as impactful, people in very successful people's lives. So that's awesome that you're able to identify her. It's also too great that I feel a kinship to that answer because like you're Brian, I felt like Tim was kind of my Brian and somebody pulling me aside and say, hey, you can keep him around cause he's fun, but maybe don't model your whole life after him. Cause he's kind of, you know,
wow. I know, Trav, this is a big moment for us. I never knew that I had that sort of impact on you.
No, I'm kidding. You didn't have any impact on me at all.
Yeah. You've done nothing. It's a great response, Matt. And I love that too. Just echoing what Trav just shared. I mean, the educator just keeps coming to the forefront here and with all of our guests. And shout out to all you people out there who dedicate your lives to this. You're having a significant impact on people.
Yeah, don't ever underestimate that. I'm sure the day-to-day out of it all is very stressful. I can only imagine. I don't have the bravery to do it. But, you know, as you can see with Matt sitting here with us, like, it's obviously worth it. So,
yeah.
Matt, any parting words of wisdom? If you were to tell anybody, hey, this is what you should get into, like, if you were to talk to maybe 18-year-old Matt self or something like that?
Have you guys seen this meme that pops up? And it's not a meme. I guess it's just a video clip of Jeff Goldblum on, I think it's the Colbert Show, maybe. He, off the top of his head, which makes Goldblum amazing, recites this like massive quote from George Bernard Shaw. Have you heard this?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good. And if you allow me, if you have like 30 seconds, I can just read it because I don't memorize it. But
you have to do it in a Goldblum voice, though.
I wish I could. That'd be awesome. So it says this. This is the true joy in life, being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one. Being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I'm of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it what I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die, for the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle to me. It is a sort of splendid torch which I have got hold of for the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations.
Oof. Man, that's good.
Goldblum. That's real great. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
that's really good. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time. I feel like we could have 5 more episodes with you and learning all things, and maybe I'll have an encyclopedia next to me specifically for technical things. But this was obviously everything I had hoped it would be, knowing how intelligent and kind and caring you are. So thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. And I do think that we're going to have you back on again.
I love that.
Sometime. So there we go. Matt, thank you very much.
Thanks, gang. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. You know, it's funny, after Tim, you know, after you and I wrapped up with Matt, we continued in our conversation. And one of the things I don't think we really dug too much into was the fact that it was not always easy for Matt to do the extraordinary things he did and has done and continues to do. It's not without its challenges. So, you know, I think we could probably have him back on to just talk about the challenges, frankly, and all the things he does. You know, what's that saying? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. That kind of
thing. Yeah. 100%, Trav. I mean, we needed another hour with him, I would say.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have been fair to do to anybody, him included.
Yeah.
he probably needed to get a few things done. But no, truthfully, I mean, just an amazing conversation. And I did really appreciate that, the transparency after our conversation too, of just, you know, the road bumps that he hit along the way that any entrepreneur would hit.
Absolutely,
and you know, going to bed at night thinking, gosh, am I doing the right thing? Like, those are just very real responses to trying something new and to venturing into a new space. So kudos to him for sticking with it, and for, you know, the what's the word I'm looking for, just the innovative thinking that he's brought to all of his efforts. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And if I may, because I know him personally, I'm going to give a really brief, our first extra wife shout out. You know, you talked about, he has a wonderful wife named Blair, who I consider a very dear friend as well. And one of the things that you just touched on in terms of like going to bed at night and wondering if you're doing the right thing, you also need that support system of somebody like Blair trusting that you are doing the right thing. That's a huge venture, and it takes a lot of trust, and it takes a lot of heart for a partner to also, you know, be along for the ride and support and all those things. So she gets her own awesome wife moment there too, if I'm allowed.
I like that you did that, Trav. However, I think that if we start shouting out other awesome wives, we may get ourselves in a little bit of trouble.
That's fair. That's fair.
Right. So, but cool idea, and I respect what you just did.
So, Tim, now that you've had a week or so to reflect,
gosh, almighty.
Oh no! Look at the face.
No, yeah.
How are you feel? Like, well, first of all, did you bring the dog to Florida?
No way. No way. Can't. No, that would not have. We flew. She's not a good traveler anyways, but no, that would never have happened. No, Dr. Kate offered a lot of really, really valuable insight. I really, really, you know, have been thinking a lot about our conversation with her. And, you know, I think she's an amazing human being. And I think that she and members of her field do incredible work, which I greatly value. However, I mean, that, you know, I can value them. The two things can exist at the same time here. I can value them, and I can still just not be a dog person. And and that's okay. You know, I mean, that's okay. So look, Abby, I'm sure, is having an amazing time at her boarding with all of her other dog friends. And I'm really happy about that. We'll pick her up tomorrow. I'll see the bill on the credit card. And
I wish more people could see the exhale on your face.
Look, people may think I'm a terrible person, and I'm, you know, that may just be the case. But we do, Abby's a good dog. We do take good care. I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression. I'm not taking good care of my dog. And I have a lot of respect for people who love animals and take care of animals. I think it's a really, really important thing. And I see the value that animals play in people's lives. So I think when we do our next season, we need to cut this segment out because it's making me feel like a bad guy. But I've learned a lot through the process too, talking about it. So thank you for being my therapist in this effort.
If I'm your therapist, we've got problems. No, but Tim, I have to give you a pat on the back because honestly, you've stuck with it and you've shown some evolution, frankly, in your feelings of it, and I've watched you work through it, and I know just both from history as well as every day that you are a good person, and I know that you do well by your dog. I just think that you probably wouldn't have a dog if it A was your choice and B didn't have the family that wanted the dog. So you've kind of just, you know, you're living in the discomfort for the sake of others and for the dog. So I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. That's a nice way of spinning everything. Thank you, Travis. I really appreciate that.
I'm here for you, bud.
It's all good.
Well, Tim, we should probably let you get back to your vacation.
It's all good.
Please give the OG listeners on your vacation with you our love. And
for sure.
Yeah, we'll report back next time. I want to hear how the pickup went and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk more about it.
Oh man! All right, should we wrap it there?
Thanks, everybody.
All right, thank you.
Tim and Travis on the mic, talking life and what's alike. Middle age, it's quite the ride. Finding joy and chasing pride. Career dreams and daily grind. Funny moments that we find. Letting go of yesterday. Making paths along the way. Middle age. Middle age mayhem, breaking free, finding out who we can be, laughing, learning all the time. Tim and Travis in their prime. Every step a brand new plan, older, wiser, still we stand, navigating through the years, sharing stories, laughs and cheers. Finding out.
about who we can be. Laughing, learning all the time. Tim and Travis in their prime. Every step a brand new plan. Older, wiser, still we stand. Navigating through the years. Sharing stories, laughs and cheers. Middle age, join the fun. Middle age has just begun. Tim and Travis lead the way. Every episode will slay.
You have an incoming call, Tim.
I'm teasing, of course.
Oh, dog.
All right, should we get going?
A lot of this was really hard.
That's kind of a high compliment, to be honest with you.
All right, I gotta go mind my rowdy children.